And now on WRS, Michael McKay with the McKay Interview.
Hello, everyone. I'm a glass half full guy, but not a cockeyed optimist. If there's a problem to be confronted, I like to search for a sensible solution. Well, almost always, anyway. I'm not a fastidious perfectionist, but the environmental problems of planet Earth's survival today do seem daunting, to put it mildly. And to find solutions to those problems based on reasoned analysis in only 30 minutes, well, it's an important subject, certainly worthy of more time, but I'm going to give it my best shot today. Brew Pierce is my guest today, and he's the founder of Envisionation, an environmental consultancy dedicated to the whole Earth system. I met him about a year ago at a science conference in Geneva, and as a non-science layman, was fascinated by his story and his approach. So too, by the way, were the various experienced climate scientists and quantum computing experts with whom I was privileged to be in the room. The conference was the biennial workshop of the International Center for Earth Simulation Foundation, ICES, created and organized by Dr. Bob Bishop, a dear friend who's been on this show a couple of times in the past. 15 years ago, while researching for a proposed TV series on climate change, Brew connected with many scientists who are specialists in their particular fields: forestry, oceans, ice, deserts, physicists, chemists, and biologists. What they all had in common, he told me, was deep concern about changes taking place within their particular field of expertise. But what they lacked was understanding of each other's disciplines and the interactions that take place between them. Envisionation is about joining the dots to get a full understanding of the biosphere functions and humanity's impact on it. Brew's a polymath, having studied landscape architecture at Manchester University with a particular interest in marine design. He spent time as a professional yachtsman, skippering one of the first modern super yachts and participating as a member of the 1982-83 America's Cup squad. And then he embarked on a 20-year career in coastal, leisure, and maritime development. He's worked as a principal and a consultant, set up numerous companies, and successfully financed and delivered projects in Europe, America, the Mediterranean, and the Caribbean. His work allowed him to gain a first-hand experience of our changing environment and its economic impact. He freely admits to being very dyslexic, and he claims it is those dyslexic thinking skills that have led to the development of the Envisionation Biosphere Restoration Plan. So we're in good company this morning. Brew Pierce, welcome to the McKay Interview. Thanks for making time for me, and sorry that we could not meet personally, but Zoom is better than no conversation at all, as you're in the UK, and I'm in Portugal.
Michael, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. And yeah, I know the bit of Portugal you're in. Beautiful place. I'm here on the south coast of Devon.
It's very pleasant too. I know the part of Devon you're in. In Geneva, you were presenting your biosphere restoration plan at that conference I mentioned. Can you explain what it is? And in particular, the living biosphere, the whole Earth system, in very simple, non-scientific English, Brew.
Yeah. Well, simply put, the biosphere is our home. It's where we live. It's the very thin membrane that surrounds this lump of space junk that we call Earth. It is everything. It's been developed by living things over the course of 3.8 billion years. And as they've evolved, so they've evolved their environments to the point that of the beautiful Earth we have now. It's changed dramatically over time. If you'd been there 2 billion years ago, it wouldn't have been a planet we could have lived on at all. It's literally everything we have around us. It's the forests, the oceans, and it functions as a whole living organism. It's able to control its own temperature. The forests effectively sweat. The oceans evaporate water, and out of the forests and off the surface of the oceans come microparticles, which as they go up into the atmosphere, form nuclei for the droplets that form clouds. So all those living things together actually have the ability to control our environment.
I see. Bruce, you know that there are many Jeremiahs around us today. You know that better than me. Prophets of doom with stories to spin and to exaggerate about imminent Armageddon. And social media helps to magnify these stories. But even science journalists can be guilty of over-egging the cake, at least sometimes. What is your view about that? And how worried should we be about mankind's future?
Well, yes. I mean, there are always outliers of people who really push it a bit too far. But the way our international structures are set up now, the reverse is probably true. The scale of our problems is, generally speaking, underreported. Now, as evidence of that, I would suggest if you review the past 30 years of IPCC reports, you will see that the observational science, i.e. actually what's happened, follows the very worst case predictions and is often above consistently over that period. So, yes, you know, the situation is very serious. And, you know, we are right to be, and you are right to be deeply concerned. And in fact, you know, this was the starting point for Invisionation's work.
So just give me a few pointers as to some of the things that you picked up immediately when you started doing this research about the danger we're in.
What we picked up first off is we met a bunch of different scientists and from different disciplines. So people who were specialists in the Arctic sea ice and were deeply concerned about that melting were not taking into account of the work of the people who were looking at the Amazon forest and the loss of forest there and the changes in the way that cloud formation was happening and rain patterns were changing and how the interaction of those things were impacting each other, which was where we started to see the rationale behind the underestimation of a lot of this. Yeah. Although, in fact, of course, on that underestimation, we also saw the vested interests that were impacting people's thought processes.
Sure. Well, there are bound to be lots of vested interests because there's a huge amount of investment, as you know, in all of this.
Yeah.
Give me one or two other examples, particularly in terms of the vegetation and
well,
the drought.
Yeah, I think it's the feedback loops that really, you know, start to concern one. You look at all that observational data and you see exponential curves, by which I mean acceleration. It's not a linear situation. It gets exponentially worse every year. And the reason those things happen is that we have this whole raft of feedback loops going on. So we've got the ice melts. As the ice melts in the Arctic, it reveals dark ground. Sunlight falling on dark ground gets absorbed, whereas sunlight falling on ice is reflected back into space.
Right.
So the dark ground warms, it absorbs solar energy, which warms the atmosphere, which then melts more ice, which allows frozen vegetation to start to rot. And that releases CO2 and methane, both of which are greenhouse gases. Methane in particular is a much stronger greenhouse gas, which warms the atmosphere, which melts the ice, and so on. And as that happens, the temperature gradient between the equator and the poles starts to change, reduce, and we get a much wavier jet stream, which disrupts the weather patterns. And with disrupted weather patterns, you get longer droughts, and you get trees that die, and dead trees burn, and burnt trees put CO2 into the atmosphere and soot. And that soot goes up into the high Arctic and lands on the ice, turns it dark, and it melts faster, and so on, ad infinitum.
So that's so quite a...
people winding each other up.
That's quite a grim picture you're painting, Brew. Is there anything that we can do about it?
Yes. As with almost any problem, if you don't fully understand what's broken, you can't fix it. The answer is in understanding the biosphere and the damage done to it. Our climate models tend to lack biological input and understanding. They're heavily influenced by chemistry and physics. And they don't take account of the big impact of human civilization over the past 10,000 years has been the reduction by more than 50% of the living things that drive and stabilize our biosphere.
I remember you mentioned that in your presentation in Geneva, Bruno. I'm actually amazed that an organization that's looking into climate change would not include biology or biological understanding in what essentially is a green planet.
Yeah, quite right. It amazes me too. And of course, there is a lot of biology in there, but not to the depth that there needs to be. And it's only recently that there's been a lot of work on documenting the total amount of living biomass on the planet. And it's our own work where we really dug down into the changes that have been made. I mean, one of the things I did a lot of was reading the reports of the early explorers. Captain Cook's log, there are some fascinating bits in there where they describe coming round headlands and seeing vast shoals of fish and manatee that would go on for miles and miles.
And
And
Captain Cook was sailing, just to remind us, in the late 18th century, is that correct?
yes,
Late 1700s.
17, yeah,
Yeah,
exactly.
1750s.
Exact date, but
Yeah.
the exploration discovery of Australia and first person to sail around Australia, the circumnavigation of the globe.
Yeah.
You can very easily look back and see that the natural landscape was dramatically different in many places. And in fact, you learn this at school. Europe was covered in trees in Roman times. The green fields of England, we think it's a wonderful natural landscape. Actually, all over the world, the natural landscape is just tortured, greatly reduced. And that's reduced the ability of the biosphere to self-regulate itself, to stabilize its temperature. Going to get back to the modelers, I mean, the impact of that is that most of those models look back at the paleo record. They look back at what happened throughout the last ice age cycles, and particularly what we describe as the interglacials, the warm periods. And we live in a warm period. It's what we describe as the Holocene, and it's an extended warm period. Under normal circumstances, we would probably be descending into the coming ice age. That's not going to happen now, but it's a very different change. And what the models don't take account of is the loss of that stabilizing ability. The tendency for extreme weather events, in our view, is increasing dramatically because of that, and it's not shown in.
Okay, but I understand your point that man, the progress of man, has denuded the planet in many ways. But tell me a little bit more about how we got here in terms of the, in your opinion, the structures that have had a negative effect, even though mankind has made great progress. Tell me a little bit more about that, as you see it.
Certainly. Good question. Having identified what has gone wrong, why has it gone wrong? And the answer to that is we have allowed the destruction of all those living things. Now, we didn't have the knowledge to understand the damage that we were doing in the past, but we're gaining and have that knowledge now. And we have legal structures which allow us to use the sky and the oceans and our general environment as a free dump for all sorts of ghastly toxins and waste gases that have gone into the atmosphere that have done all this damage. We desperately need to have a legal structure in place that prevents that from happening. Change number one.
This would be a global legal structure.
Well, exactly. Ideally, a global legal structure. And the good news, I suppose, is that the campaign to make ecocide a fifth crime against peace, based on the Rome Statute.
And again, for the benefit of us who are not familiar with this sort of jargon, what is ecocide in your definition, or the definition of those that look at these things in detail, and what is the Rome Statute?
Ecocide is any large-scale act of environmental damage that is carried out knowingly. The Rome Statute and the Crimes Against Peace is what came out of the negotiation after the Second World War, and it's those primary human rights that series of crimes like genocide. Ecocide follows on from genocide. In fact, back in 1970, it was nearly added to the statute, and it was prevented by the Brits and the Americans and the other hydrocarbon countries, which is a tragedy, really, because that would create the level playing field that we all need. It's pulling all of these things together, our impact on it. The other side to this, the other thing that's gone wrong beyond the legal structures, is that our Earth system accounting is completely fraudulent. And when I say that, I refer back to the environmental damage we've done and the cost of restoring that damage. So until you take that fully into account, you place yourself in a position where you make assumptions about value and wealth, which are not realistic. In fact, to explain that, we carried out an exercise where we assumed that Invisionation had been employed by an intergalactic investor that was considering purchasing the multifaceted organization Earth Inc.
Right.
And we were asked to carry out a due diligence report and take a look at it. And of course, we carried out that report our report when it went back. Said, sorry, but Earth Inc. fundamentally is bankrupt. It's not on a sustainable path. And the fundamental problem with that is it's being appallingly mismanaged. Yeah, Michael, you were asking for hope for your grandchildren.
Yes, we talked about that.
Actually, when one gets into it, it's not really just our grandchildren. I think you need to think about us and our children. I mean, frankly, anybody that's planning to live more than about 10 or 15 years are going to be truly faced with the problems of a rapidly deteriorating climatic situation. And it's not just the heat, but it's the stresses that it will put on civilization structures as climate becomes more and more extreme.
We're going to go into the detail of how you deliver on all of this, Brew, as we move towards the end of the program. But my guest today is Brew Pearce of Invisionation, a consultancy in the UK, and we're talking about the biosphere via Zoom. So, Brew, tell me and our listeners how we can deliver, how you deliver the biosphere restoration plan, as time, obviously, is quite short from what you're saying.
Yes. So our biosphere restoration plan takes a holistic look at it and tries to identify what needs to be done. It's comes out in the form of a story, a desperately needed narrative as to a positive narrative, how we solve our problems. You go back and look at the real problems and look at fit solution. So the primary problem we've identified is the loss of living biomass and the need to restore that 50% that's gone. And then how to go about doing that, and is it possible? Perhaps I should take a step back from that. I've described a situation of a coming storm. Best thing to do, you know, when you have a problem is you need to get a plan in place. Once you put a plan in place, people will settle down, become more confident, and will actually start to react sensibly. We got a shipping forecast that says that there's a gale force 8-9 coming in, and everybody starts to feel very uncomfortable. That's the discomfort that particularly the younger people are feeling now.
Yeah.
What you then do is get organized, make a plan, get prepared, and set a target as to where you need to get to and how you're going to get there.
Yeah.
Well, from a climate perspective and from an Earth system perspective, that's good news because we have a target. We have the 17...
SDG goals.
Yeah, Sustainable Development Goals.
That's right.
And those SDG goals effectively call for a planet with 9 billion people on it.
Yes.
Well, and that's a great thing. We've agreed on it. 193 countries have all agreed where they want to get to. And it's worth looking up those particular goals. But fundamentally, it's a better spread of wealth, food, rights for women. It basically says that we're going to have, instead of 2 billion people living well on the planet, we're going to have 9 billion people living like you or I.
Yeah, I'm familiar with them because I had the head of the SDG lab at the United Nations on this show about 3 or 4 years ago. So then she took me through all of those individual goals. But Brew, before we get to the end of the program, I really want to ask you about your attitude towards the ingenuity of man. I get the sense when I listen to you that you are confident that something can be done, that you have confidence in human capabilities to achieve food and water and energy production. But tell me a little bit more about your thinking and why you think that way.
Well, we have to think that way because we're faced with two futures at the moment. One is a Mad Max future for the few of us that survive. The other is the Star Trek future we've all been brought up to believe in. It's just a question of how you get there. The wealth of humanity is linked to the infinite free resources we have, which is free energy from the sun and the rotation of the planet and geothermal energy and indeed nuclear energy. Anything that is not going to damage the environment and warm the planet further. And it's also linked to the infinite capability of the human mind. You know, we are fantastic problem solvers. When we apply our mind to something, we can really do it. We've also proven our ability to control the climate to a great extent. We've carried out this experiment of adding greenhouse gases, and we've prevented the descent into the next ice age.
And just tell me again about this. I think it's more than an idea, but this proposal of restoring nutrient cycles to the oceans, because I find that fascinating, but didn't really understand it.
Okay, our oceans have become very devoid of life. We've removed the whales and many of the larger creatures, and we've overfished them, and we've particularly taken out the big fish. So when all that life was in the ocean, the natural nutrients were recycled constantly. That's now gone, and huge areas of the Pacific are pretty much ocean deserts. The concept there is to help nurse this life back into place with... in one instance, there's a proposal for buoyant flakes. This would be rice husks with lignin and mineral tailings used to make little tiny flakes, which you scatter on the ocean surface, which would make those necessary nutrients bioavailable a long time, which creates the food for the phytoplankton, which creates the food for the zooplankton, and the anchovies and the sardines and the mackerel and so on down the food chain. And you bring the whales back, and the whales poo, and that poo recycles it, and the fish dive deep into the ocean and come up from the depths. And actually, the zooplankton migrates nearly 1,000 meters up and down through the ocean every day. And all those millions of tiny legs are stirring the water and transporting those nutrients around. So and that's what we've lost. That's what we're going to bring back.
Are you telling me fact, or are you telling me things that have actually been tried and proven in practice over and over again? Or is it just an idea?
Fact about what's happened, and I'm telling you about experiments that are taking place at the moment.
Right.
In the case of the buoyant flake situation. I mean, there are other projects for growing sargassum and kelp and for drawing nutrient-rich water up from the depths to the ocean surface to stimulate life.
Right.
So those things are all taking place. And it's the same sort of thing on land. Human ingenuity is coming through in agrotechnologies. We can farm vertically. We can synthesize proteins. We can grow algaes very, very fast. And from that, we can feed them into just the muscle of animals. From just a little genetic sample, we can grow beef and fish and chicken with no cruelty at a fraction of the energy and water cost, produce it at a third of the price, and on 5 or 10% of the space we use now. And that's free space then allows you to regrow, rewild, bring back the forests, bring back the prairies. This is how we're going to replace the 50% of missing life that we have on the planet.
Well, it sounds optimistic and full of promise, but a huge project. Look, the last question. The McKay interview has a variety of listeners in Switzerland, in the UK, and many countries around the world. What would you have them do? What's your call to action?
The first call to action for anybody and everybody is face up to reality and recognize your ignorance. Notice I say ignorance and not ignorance. We actually all know, but it's hard to process, so we choose to ignore it.
Which is human nature sometimes.
Yeah, that's a human condition.
Yeah.
It becomes increasingly hard to ignore as we get affected by extreme weather events, whether directly or indirectly, because they have an economic impact on us.
Yeah.
The first action to take is to make sure that you vote for leaders who understand our problems and are serious about taking action. And the next action is think biosphere, think your environment, think on how to protect it at every single level, which covers your recycling and not polluting and all of those other good things that we can do.
Right.
A third call to action would be we, and I'm speaking of this nation and the broader group of people that network that surround us, need help, and we need people to help us develop the message, get the message out, and we need people to invest in the biosphere restoration and bring the biosphere restoration plan together. As I say, step one is getting the narrative out. The narrative, assisting getting the narrative out is about putting it on film. It's about books. It's about educating children. It's educating the populace. And with that knowledge, drawing them to action and getting people to invest in the right places so that we can start to make these huge changes that we have to make to build the stable, healthy biosphere that we all want to have. And to create that Star Trek future. It's a call to action. Take it seriously.
Thank you. Brew, it's been fascinating. I mean, clearly, the kind of projects you're talking about are huge, but they're vital. for our survival in the long term, but I thank you for patiently answering all my questions. My guest today has been Bru Pearce, founder of Envisionation, an environmentalist consultancy based in the UK and focused on the biosphere. Thanks again, Bru.
Michael, thank you very much indeed.
That was The McKay Interview with Michael McKay. And don't forget, you can hear that interview again on our website, worldradio.ch.